Alrighty then. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen. Ray, back with us on the other side of the glass after a very well-deserved vacation over in SoCal. Had a nice time over there, but it's always good to have Ray back. And on this Thursday, August 24th, Ray and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, coming from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. We've got our live streaming. That means worldwide live listening anywhere that you can find a computer. Go to buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. That we've got all the podcasts available for you and our complete show archive at buckmastershow.com. If there's any point during the hour that you would like to join in the conversation and perhaps have a question answered, 790-2040. Let's go now on the Buckmaster Show live line to United States Representative Martha McSally, Republican representing Arizona's 2nd Congressional District. Congresswoman, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you doing today?
Very good. Are you in D.C.?
No, thank God. I'm in Arizona. We're here until the day after Labor Day, and it's been great being around the district in this time, visiting people, talking to people, talking to schools, and touring small businesses, and having roundtable discussions. Any day in Arizona is much better than a day in D.C., that's for sure.
Hey, we just learned, the news just broke about the Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, had been studying. Of course, 27 national monuments were under review, including some here in Arizona. And from what we heard on the news at the top of the hour, he's basically said things are going to stay as is.
Yeah, so we have four of those in Arizona of the 27. He's already given a ruling to leave one of them unchanged. So we're waiting to hear the final recommendations on the Ironwood Forest, the Vermilion Cliffs, and the Sonoran Desert. And I wrote a letter to him urging him to ensure that he has strong public input into his decision. So this is an encouraging piece of news that he's essentially announcing that none of them are going to be closed altogether. However, we're still waiting. We think today we'll get additional information on the specifics of recommendations for each of the ones in Arizona. So we still are waiting to hear whether there's going to be a recommendation to change the boundaries or any other alterations to the three remaining ones in Arizona. So we're keeping our ear to the ground and waiting for that news. Whether this is the first response today and then there's going to be more time to get the detailed information on any other way ahead. But we think we're still potentially getting some more information today from them, so we'll be waiting for that.
As a combat veteran who saw duty in the Middle East, the news from the president on Monday about a troop buildup in Afghanistan well, I'm sure you've got some personal thoughts about that as well as professionally. Where do we go from here in Afghanistan?
Well, I do, Bill. I've been over there, deployed over there, commanded the 354th Fighter Squadron, spent time over there commanding that squadron out of Davis-Monthan. And I've been over there now twice leading a congressional delegation to see what's going on currently. And I'm deeply disturbed in my trips over there to see we essentially under the last administration. And look, there's been mistakes along the way in Afghanistan since right after 9/11, you know, 2001, when we first started combat operations there. There were missed opportunities, there were strategic mistakes, operational mistakes. There's plenty of blame to go around. But under the last administration, they had a focus on numbers and time frames as opposed to strategic objectives. Those of us who've been in the military or anyone who's involved in national security strategy knows we really need to have an understanding of our vital national interests. What are our objectives? What are we trying to achieve? And then you have the number of troops, the number of support, the amount of time it takes in order to achieve those objectives. The last administration was just randomly setting troop levels and cutting them down and letting our enemies, the Taliban and the other dozen of terrorist organizations that are in Afghanistan, would get the message that, hey, these guys are leaving at a certain time. And the old adage in Afghanistan with the Taliban and other terrorist organizations was, you have the watches, but we have the time. And so it was not smart policy. We are not winning in Afghanistan now with 8,400 troops. The Taliban have been able to push back. The Afghan National Security Forces, I tell you, they are taking some significant losses, fighting on their own last year and this year, really for the first time. But they don't yet have a lot of the enablers, the air support, the intelligence, surveillance operations, and they've had some heavy losses. And we do have a small footprint there still, but it's not enough. And I saw that firsthand while I was over there. And we gave up some strategic gains and opportunities related to fighting the terrorists and the terrorist organizations and holding the ground that had been gained because the last administration had just randomly cut that number back to 8,400. So I think listening to the president is a new approach that we focus on our vital national security interests. This isn't about turning Afghanistan into a 21st century, liberal democracy, although that would be nice for them. That's not our focus. Our focus needs to be taking away safe haven for terrorists and organizations like the Taliban. The last administration had tightened up the rules of engagement, so we couldn't target the Taliban anymore. Tremendous frustration by our military leaders over there as they watched these terrorists and insurgents gain ground, and we could do nothing about it. So the new approach is we'll focus on our vital national interests. We're going to go after the terrorist organizations. We're taking the gloves back off. And that we're no longer allowing Pakistan to get away with being a safe haven. I used to teach when I was at the Marshall Center, National Security Studies. I used to teach what was going on in Afghanistan and the topic of when insurgencies win. And all the time in history, an insurgency is going to win when they have a safe haven somewhere that's untouched. And that's what we have going on in Pakistan right now. So it's good to see that there's a recognition of that, because we can't keep focusing just on Afghanistan without realizing there's a safe haven in Pakistan as well.
Well, the percentage of territory that the Taliban controls, some say as much as 45% to 65%. Does the A-10 have any role in this new buildup over there?
Potentially, but possibly not. We've, we used to be there with the A-10 nonstop. Again, I was over there myself flying in command of the A-10 squadron out of Davis-Monthan. The A-10's been a tremendous asset there when we had a significant presence of U.S. troops. We have other assets over there now, and what we're trying to do is build up the Afghan Air Force with this A-29. So we actually have some former A-10 pilots over there teaching the Afghans on how to do both air support. There's not much of an air threat there. They don't necessarily need all the survivability and the capability of an A-10 in the Afghan Air Force. So these A-29s are providing a light attack aircraft. But you can't just create an Air Force overnight. It takes a long time to build the culture and the training and the experience. And they're doing that, but it takes a while. But whether we deploy additional assets like the A-10, it's certainly well-suited. If we're going to do a build-up and provide better support overhead, the A-10 would be a great choice. Let the commanders work through the menu of options for them. We still have a presence with special operators on the ground, and we're still training and advising our Afghan national security counterparts. But we were only doing that at the brigade level, and they really needed it down at the battalion level as well. And so we'll see on what the mix is going to be of this increase. But the A-10 is certainly well-suited for that environment.
What can you say about funding for Davis-Monthan and for Fort Huachuca?
Well, we finally turned around the sequestration and the decrease in funding of our military that's really had a tremendous negative impact, nationwide on our troops. We passed in the House this year the National Defense Authorization Act and the Defense Appropriations Bill. We provided a significant increase. It was even $18 billion over what the president's budget requested for our troops. And in that, I fought tirelessly for the missions at Davis-Monthan and Fort Huachuca, and we've got them fully funded, the A-10, the EC-130 rescue helicopters, and then down at Fort Huachuca, intelligence, electronic warfare, unmanned aerial systems, NETCOM, and an increase in Army end strength that could provide some additional resources there at Fort Huachuca. In addition, I fought this year for a $103 million to open up the process to start rebuilding the wings of the 110 A-10s that are remaining in the inventory out of 283 that haven't had their wings rebuilt and re-strengthened. 173 of the fleet have had that happen, but when the Air Force was trying to get rid of the A-10, they shut down that contract. Now they realize that the A-10 is going to, and they agree the A-10 should be in the fleet for a very long time. So I secured the funding to start that bidding, to open up a production line again, and start rewinging the remaining of the fleet. And so we secured that initial seed money for that contract, plus some other important upgrades for the A-10, for laser rockets, and some other air traffic control type of stuff. So pretty good wins in the House version of both these bills. We're waiting on the Senate to move, and we'll be working on the, you know, the final funding for fiscal year 18 over the next weeks and months, and making sure we get those across the finish line because they're so vital for our national security and our local economy, of course.
All right, stick around, Congresswoman. We're going to take our first break here on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with Congresswoman Martha McSally, 790-2040. For questions and comments, we'll be right back.
The Arizona Wildcats kick off the 2017 football season on September 2nd with Fan Appreciation Night and an exclusive bobblehead giveaway of NFL superstar Rob Gronkowski. There are several ticket packages, including one that guarantees you your own Gronk bobblehead. Go to ArizonaWildcats.com/FB to buy your tickets now and learn more or call 621-CATS. Single game tickets start at just $12.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. The Friday Roundtable features Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, and Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial page editor of the Arizona Daily Star. Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business with Weekend Watch on Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI and always on BuckmasterShow.com. Seconds before 12:20 in the afternoon here on The Buckmaster Show, Congresswoman Martha McSally is with us on The Buckmaster Show live line. And before we go to my next question, let's have a listener question. And we have Chris on the live line. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Martha. This is Chris Schief. And I wanted to ask the question about how you're doing with your bipartisan effort on the healthcare rewrite. I know you've been a leader in that. I'm really proud of you for all the work that you've done. And I'll take my answer off the air, but I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate the question. So I'm a part of what's called the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is about nearly even number of Democrats and Republicans. We've got 43 members overall. And the intent of this group is if we come to some tough issues and we can't seem to break through, let's see if we can bottom up solve the problems and the issues of the day in a bipartisan manner. And about the 3 or 4 weeks before, you know, the Senate really came to a standstill on what they were trying to do related to health care, I went to the co-chair of the group and said, hey, if we want to be solving problems, this is the one to solve. We've got the individual health insurance market, which is failing right now. It's about where 7% of people get their insurance, but this is where the Affordable Care Act is really collapsing under its own weight, is in the individual insurance market. We've got 14 or 15 counties in Arizona, only had one choice last year, prices going up over 100%. This was all before, you know, this administration was in the White House, before any efforts in the House and the Senate to try and provide some stability and move in a different direction. And the time is running out for insurance companies to make decisions for 2018 on what the prices are going to be and whether they're even going to offer insurance. We've got about 40% of counties in America right now that potentially are going to have only one choice and many that have no choices. So I went and said, look, let's see if we can find, I know this is a very divisive issue, very different philosophical views about how healthcare should be dealt with from the Democrats and Republicans, but we have an immediate problem in front of us, stabilizing the individual market, and also providing some relief to small businesses and families from some of the more onerous Affordable Care Act mandates. Let's see if we can sit down and solve this. And, you know, just like we're in the military, if it's your idea, you are in charge of it. So I was given the charge to be the GOP leader in a small working group. We know kidding sat down in my office. Often it was myself and a couple of Democrats sitting there with a whiteboard and negotiating what we thought was going to work to provide some immediate solutions. Now, this isn't the whole way forward of some of the things that we need to deal with, but we were able to come up with a 5-point plan that we could agree with, and we came out publicly with it with 43 members, Democrats and Republicans, saying this is what we think needs to happen. I'll go through the 5 points really quickly in a minute, but I'll tell you, a couple days after we announced that, we've been talking to a lot of senators. We feel they have to really make the next effort here, and we've had some really promising senators saying, hey, we think you guys just came up with a framework to get us to move forward here. So I'm really proud of this effort. What we agreed to is to continue to fund the CSRs, which are the subsidies that go to people. If this doesn't happen, it's going to cost the taxpayer more because premiums are going to go up. We need to provide some predictability, but we need to make sure that they're paid for and they're brought under congressional authority. That was the first point. Second point was providing some sort of backstop managed at the state level for the sickest people that are in the market that are really driving up the cost for everybody else. So if we can provide a stability fund, which was in both the House and Senate versions of the bill, that backstops those sickest, then it creates a healthier market. Young, healthy people have not been getting into the market because it's just too expensive for them, or the networks are too limited, and we got to have a healthier market for them to get in. So that was the second piece. The third piece is, which was a great win that I negotiated for, is moving the employer mandate, which right now, if you have 50 or more employees working 30 hours a week or more, you're required to provide health care or pay a penalty. And this is hurting small businesses. Some of them are sitting at 48, 49 employees or part-time workers. We move that up to 500 working 40 hours or more a week. This is a big win for small business growth. We've been hearing it from across our community, and also allows the businesses from up to 500 to put their employers in the individual market or have that choice, which will also help stabilize the individual market. And then the fourth point was to repeal the medical device tax, which has had bipartisan support in the past. And then the last point is strengthening these waivers. They're called 1332 waivers for state innovation that we could agree, Democrats or Republicans. And we wanted to make sure we weren't just throwing money at this issue. We got everybody to agree there needs to be offsets that need to be paid for. And I think the big news out of this is that Democrats and Republicans work together. We broke the fever. We've got some wins for things that have mattered to those who've really, you know, felt that we needed to move away from the model of Obamacare. We're providing some stability for families and small businesses, and we found it by working together, and I was leading that effort. So okay. I'm pretty proud of it. We'll see some movement, hopefully, in the Senate, and we'll keep you posted.
All right. Only got about 4 minutes to go, and I do want to bring up the U.S. House Homeland Security Committee going to be looking at domestic terrorism. I think the committee there, the chair, has announced a September 12th hearing. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that is. It's going to be a full committee hearing, and we're going to have in front of us leaders from the Department of Homeland Security, Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the National Counterterrorism Center. Now, members of the committee, you know, get to focus on whatever questions they would like to ask, having those leaders there. But certainly, I would expect that domestic terrorist issues will be an important topic there. What's going on with the growth of these neo-Nazi and other supremacist groups and the threat that they are. Certainly we can expect that to be an important topic at that hearing.
And you're, of course, and I should point out, you're a member of that committee, right?
Yes, I am. I am. So I will be attending that and asking my questions there.
Are you worried about this domestic terrorism threat?
I am. I'm worried about the rising, the growth of a domestic terrorism threat from some of these extreme groups. I am also certainly concerned about the ISIS homegrown extremism as well. There are a variety of different threats out there that are public safety threats that could be very harmful to our community through violence and other things. So I am definitely worried.
How about a government shutdown? We're hearing there may be several scenarios that are being considered. I believe the government runs out of money at the end of September. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, so we have funded the government for this fiscal year, which ends on 30th of September. We are working through in the House. We've already passed a appropriations bill for four of the different of the 12. We've already passed that, and we'll be the first week we're back voting on, we think, the remaining eight bills, possibly together. But we still have to get that through the Senate and get a final agreement on the overall top-line number, because we are still under this thing called sequestration. Many of us believe we need to move away from that, especially because of the impact that it's had on our military. So there's a lot of negotiations that are still to go. Keep an eye on the House moving early September. And then my expectation is potentially that there would be another continuing resolution maybe for a couple months while we work through our differences and do the final negotiations. You know, there are always threats of certain things related to government, you know, the government not staying open and shutting down. I don't think that's helpful. I think we need to work through our differences. Government shutdowns are harmful to communities like ours with the military and furloughs and defense contractors and national parks and others. So let's work through our differences and provide some stability and predictability, and that's going to be the voice that I'll bring to the table.
All right. I only have a few seconds. You've been a huge animal welfare advocate. Any news nationally on that front?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for asking. So I am the leader on the Humane Cosmetics Act. This is common sense, broadly supported to just, you know, support not no longer having animal testing on cosmetics. This is many other countries and many companies are leading the way on this. There's plenty of other alternatives, bipartisan legislation, and so we're going to keep pushing that forward. There's some other animal cruelty bills, tightening penalties on animal cruelty, stopping the awful practice of what they call horse soaring, which is really torturing horses in order to have them step higher in their parades, which is absolutely unnecessary. And so I'm going to keep leading on these issues that are very important to me as an animal lover, but also most people can agree on these issues. There's many things people disagree on, but the love of animals and stopping inhumane treatment is one that's pretty unifying.
All right. I will say amen to that. How's that?
Absolutely.
All right. Congresswoman Martha McSally, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Bill. It's always great to be with you. Have a
All
good
right.
day.
You too. 12:30 now on The Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jeff with Enhance Openings, Windows, Doors, and More. Did you know windows, doors, and skylights are about 30% of all the wall and ceiling areas of your home, but waste up to 80% of all your home's utility bills? Enhance Openings is Tucson's Pella Select Wholesale Installation Company. We'll save you money on Pella products and on installation.
Text the word Pella to 313131 and get free installation. Or call 686-5617, ROC CR6030-5859, enhanceopenings.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from top national columnists, plus Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient, and improve mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Thursday edition, all things green, green things, one of our fine sponsors. Jan and Jack, the owners, they started off with a four-acre parcel over there along the Rito River and have now expanded it to 13 acres. It's really beautiful. They've got 33 greenhouses. They've got great pottery for your plants and all the gardening supplies you need. And I just saw on their fine website, greenthingsaz.com, that they just received this week hundreds of citrus plants in all sizes. So check that out. Just west of the Brandy Fenton Park over at Green Things. Let's welcome now Gary Watson. Gary is an independent running in the Tucson City Council election in Ward 3. Gary, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Bill. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, you are running as an independent, and if elected, we believe you would be the first independent elected to the Tucson City Council. How did you take this step to decide? Because nowadays, you know, getting into politics, a lot of people don't want anything to do with it. All your personal information,
it seems, is exposed.
It leaves you pretty exposed. So why'd you decide to get into it?
There wasn't any one of those one aha moments. It's as we've watched things. I'm a firefighter with Northwest Fire, and firefighters were pretty political to begin with. And as we've watched what's gone on in the city and how public safety has kind of been ignored, we've gone through a recession and having to balance the budget. It was on the backs of public safety. We had to pass the Prop 101 sales tax. We made sure and put things in that to make sure the money went where it was supposed to go. But that's still not enough. We need to put public safety back in the forefront. And as I've looked around the city, I've seen all these things that are ignored that need more attention. The city council needs some diversity on it as well. I think we can bring that. I've got a good background with some political activity we do as firefighters, lobbying in Washington and in state capitol. I think I could bring a fresh voice, and really what we're all about is common sense, and we can bring that to the city.
I would guess that at the firehouse that firemen and firewomen talk about politics.
We solve all the world's problems at the kitchen table. Oh, absolutely.
I bet. You know, you figure out how you're going to move forward and solving these problems, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing to remember with firefighters is 90% of our calls are to the places where there's problems in the city. It's either, you know, the poverty areas, it's during crime sprees, it's elderly folks that are struggling to make ends meet. That's where we live. That's where we run our calls. And those are the people that need a hand up. And as firefighters, we're all about charity. And police are as well, all of public safety. We do this to give back to the community to begin with. And running for city council is just a chance for me to extend that a little deeper.
Now, there is no Republican candidate, so whoever wins in the three-way race, and we've had all three of them here on the program and did a half-hour debate, if you will. I don't really call it a debate. I kind of call it a conversation
right,
to let my listeners know who these people are. And so whoever wins the Democratic primary next week will face off against you, Gary Watson, in Ward 3. So then it's like it's open season, right?
We're ready to roll.
It's one-on-one. And I do want to extend right now, and I'll make it very public, I want to invite you and the winner of the Democratic primary to sit down here on the show for about a half hour and have a conversation.
I will accept. Okay. I'll tell you right now, Bill, we've had several forums we've been involved in. Mm-hmm. I feel, without a doubt, that I have the best answers for Tucson. And I will welcome any chance to get in the room with any one of the three Dems. They're great people. We've had great conversations. They all have some wonderful ideas. They all care about the city greatly. But I do think I have what the city needs, and I would welcome the chance to sit down in front of any group. This needs to be about the candidates. Put the candidates in a room, compare us, find which one fits your needs, which one you think will best serve the city.
What's the big issue as far as you're concerned? What have you voiced at these? And you've been in pretty much all of these forums, and I've remarked to my colleagues in the media, I've never seen so much attention on one particular ward race. And, right. And a lot of that has to do with it's pretty much the only contested race going on right now with the Democrats. But what do you voice? What's your marquee issue, if you will?
Well, that's a great question, because I've actually been kind of disappointed in the forums that what I feel is the biggest issue for Tucson hasn't come up.
It's not being addressed.
It's not being addressed. And public safety has got to be the number one issue of this election. That is the number one core service the city should provide. Tucson has twice the national average crime rate, highest crime rate of a city in the state of Arizona. We had to pass a special sales tax just to provide for public safety. Our mayor was carjacked at gunpoint. The police chief had a smash and grab on his car, and we're still not talking about public safety. The only question that's come up is how are we going to pay for the pension of public safety, not about how are we going to provide for the safety of our citizens. And if you take public safety even farther, it has the biggest effect on our economy and moving businesses to Tucson. A business that wants to come in, they're looking at three things. They're looking for, is the city safe? Is there a good education system in the city for the qualified workforce? And then is there money to invest? But the first thing is the safety. Would you want to move your employees to a city with a crime rate twice the national average?
Well, let's face it, Gary, when someone calls 911, they've got an emergency.
Yes.
They want a cop or they want a firefighter at their home, and they want them there now.
Yes. And the reality, I said this one the other day, the fire department is the only public service that is still 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Even with your police service, you have to go online and fill out a report, because we've cut services so much because we're short so many officers, that fire department is still your only 24-hour-a-day service. And they're struggling with personnel. They are stretched so thin. Their response times have gone down simply because we don't have the staffing. We've cut it back so much to balance the budget.
Now, when people bring up, well, why aren't you a Republican? What was the decision to go independent? Kind of give us the backstory there.
That was a great story, actually. So when we decided to run, I've been registered as a Republican most of my life since I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. But it was mainly at that time I wanted to vote in primary elections. And, for 30 years, I never really thought much about the Republican Party. It was just, I believed in a smaller government, local government. I think local government has a bigger impact on our lives. So when we got ready to run, we sat down with the Republican Party and said, hey, I want to run for city council. What can you guys tell us about it? And we had a 3-hour meeting that was very interesting, to say the least. We didn't agree on quite a few issues. They called me back 2 weeks later and said, yeah, you know what? We're not going to be able to support you. You're not Republican.
Wow.
And I said,
Republican enough?
Well, basically not Republican. I believe I was supporting the sales tax. I do believe solar power is a worthwhile investment. Those were two big ones. And then there were several other issues we talked about. So we had to make a decision.
So you're saying you're not like a party line or anything.
Oh,
you're
God,
truly
no.
An independent kind of guy when it comes to decisions. You take every decision and weigh on it.
I'm a firefighter. That's what we do. We respond to your calls. We gather the information. We make the best decision. That's what the city needs as well. Party lines are, all they do is cause a lot of fight. We talk about the left. We talk about the right nonstop. But really, the middle should be what's driving these decisions. Find the common ground. I heard Congresswoman McSally saying earlier, let's find where we agree and fix those issues first. And that's what I can bring as an independent.
Well, and a lot of people see city council across the country, there are many that are nonpartisan.
Yes.
We have some in our area here that are nonpartisan. You kind of like that nonpartisan way, right?
Well, I mean, we talk about diversity in everything else in our lives. We want diversity in our schools, diversity in our businesses. Why do we not want diversity on our city council with our leadership? It only brings better ideas. It brings, as long as we can have the discussion without it being an emotional discussion, and let's talk about the facts, and let's try to educate each other and convince each other rather than yell and fight and get emotional. Let's use some intelligence and find the best solutions for the city.
How have your colleagues accepted this wading into the political arena? Boy, I bet it makes for a lot of conversation at the firehouse.
Well, first of all, they've been picking on me, calling me Ward 3 instead of Captain. So I'll take care of that with my guys. But very, very supportive. What we understand in the fire service, and our international association figured this out years ago, local politics has the greatest impact on public services. And so we need to be involved in those. We need to have a voice in those and make sure that we can educate these other elected officials. You know, nothing against who they are, but their background's not in public safety. So they don't always understand the needs of it, the expenses of it, why we do the things we do. I mean, your fire department, we're a standing army. We're better off when we don't run calls, but when you need us, there's no substitute.
All right, Gary Watson, and your website?
www.watson4citycouncil.com. We also have a Facebook page, Watson, again, 4 City Council. We do have our launch party is coming up this Tuesday at Twig's Restaurant at 5 o'clock. We'd love to have people come out, see what we're about. And mainly, if you have a group, any kind of committee, any kind of group, Rotary Club, anything, reach
You'll
out.
You'll be there?
I will be there anytime, any day. I will not duck any conversation. I want to meet with you.
All right. And Gary Watson already consenting to do a little bit of a conversation with whoever his opponent will be right here on the Buckmaster Show.
Bring it on.
All right, Gary, thank you very much.
Bill, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate
All right.
it.
We will be right back. 12:45. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Named after the classic New Orleans cocktail, Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at RTAmobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. It is the Buckmaster Show. You know, there is so much to do in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. Do some hiking along the Continental Divide Trail, go birding along the Gila River, fish at Lake Roberts, or visit the historic Pinos Altos community. Lots to do, great places to stay. Visit southwestnewmexico.org to plan your visit to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now on the Buckmaster Show live line a good friend of this program, Dr. David Armstrong, former University of Arizona Distinguished Outreach Professor of Surgery, co-founder of the Southern Arizona Limb Salvage Alliance. Dr. Armstrong now is over at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. He's a professor of surgery there and director of the Southwestern Academic Limb Salvage Alliance, known as SALSA. Dr. Armstrong, how are you?
Bill Buckmaster, it is great to hear your euphonic, stentorian voice.
How has the move gone over to Southern California?
Well, I will bring you the latest update. I have a lovely office with a glorious view of the city and the medical center here in Los Angeles. Not too much smog today, and I have a massive pile of boxes behind me and not too many diplomas on the wall and just your voice to keep me company.
Well, all those diplomas can be very intimidating sometimes.
I'm just a toe doctor, Mr. Buckmaster, yeah. But it does make me feel good to look back and every now and then if I feel intimidated.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this epidemic of diabetes. How serious is it? Is there any good news?
Well, I guess the really good news is that we're even talking about it because, the last decade was the first decade in the history of humanity that more folks started dying. I know this sounds morbid, from non-infectious diseases than like diabetes, heart disease, cancer, than from all of the plagues in the world combined. So that was a big deal in the last decade. So one of these big three is diabetes, and of these big three, counting cancer and of course, cardiovascular disease, it's been like the third wheel and largely ignored in a lot of ways. But now what's happening is I think a lot more people, just like you and I, are having this discussion right now about this problem.
A lot of the folks that do have diabetes, they have problems with the feet, and it starts with an ulcer on the bottom of the feet. What advice can you give to my listeners if they have any concerns about a foot ulcer? What's the first thing you need to do?
Well, we have a saying in this area in so-called limb salvage that time is tissue, and we want to preserve as much tissue as possible. If you are concerned that you might have a problem down there, any kind of problem at all, if it wasn't there yesterday and it's there today and it's bothering you, I'd call your doctor, your general doctor, and certainly your foot doctor. And the data are really strong that just getting in to see that doctor, certainly for preventative visits, but if you have a problem as well, not only can be limb-saving, but can even be life-saving in some cases.
So in other words, the sooner you get in to the doctor to have it seen about, your chances improve dramatically. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
you have summarized it beautifully. The problem with, I think, diabetes in general, but certainly these foot problems specifically, is that a lot of the symptoms are absent, and so they're silent. And so I like to say that, you know, diabetes is a silent, sinister kind of syndrome, you know? Mm-hmm. And so people don't have these sort of symptoms. And a lot of folks aren't going to have pain before a wound shows up, like they would normally if they didn't have diabetes. People with diabetes develop neuropathy. They lose what one of my mentors used to call the gift of pain, and they wear a hole in their foot like you or I would wear a hole in a sock or a shoe.
Mm. So a lot of it is definitely just check the bottom of your feet periodically, make sure there's nothing coming up there. And I do want to talk about probiotics, and because the treatment, I guess, is traditionally with wound healing is the first step is usually an antibiotic, correct?
At least half the time.
Okay.
When someone has a wound, mm-hmm. it's going to get infected. And once it gets infected, about 20% of those people are going to have some form of amputation around the world. That's why there's an amputation, unfortunately, every 20 seconds around the world. But the good news is that you and I are talking about this, and the good news is that is not a foregone conclusion, not at all anymore, thanks to centers like what you have at Banner University Medical Center and, of course, here at Keck School of Medicine, where we've established a SALSA unit. That is not at all a foregone conclusion anymore.
What about these probiotics? There's been some new research into that area.
Yeah, it is an interesting time. We've written for the longest time that, you know, we're in this antimicrobial arms race, and the where we come up with an antibiotic, but then the bacteria figure it out, and they have a countermeasure, and we escalate, and then we get all these superbugs and all of these big problems. And we're approaching a time now where there's what some people call a post-antibiotic era, which is a little scary, where there are some bacteria that are outsmarting all antibiotics. But the good news is that there are a number of fronts where we can attack this. And colleagues of ours, and some work that we've done, but colleagues of ours as well, have taken it to another level in Manchester, where I used to work in England, have found that adding certain bacteria to a wound or to the skin may actually help compete against some of these superbugs. And in other words, it's kind of like making a slightly more friendly bacterial community on the skin.
Would these be applied then topically to the wound directly? How would that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are all options are open now. The most logical thing would be that they would be applied topically or even around the area, or maybe even periodically after someone has healed a wound to reduce the risk of problems in the future. All of those options appear to be on the table, and certainly early days yet, but these interesting initial data seem to suggest that we may be getting to a time where we're adding bacteria, not just subtracting it.
Well, you know, let's hope that folks don't ever have to get to the stage where they have that kind of an open wound on their feet. And
sure.
And probably the best thing to do is make sure you do know your numbers, check them at least once a year about diabetes prevention. Talk a little bit about that for us.
Well, I think over many, many years, we've seen that if you control a couple of things in diabetes, then your chances for a long and healthy life and extending it are improved dramatically. And that is improve your glucose control, and that can be measured with a whole variety of things, most notably what's called a hemoglobin A1C. Most people with diabetes know that number now. And the other thing is to keep your blood pressure in control. And also along with that, things like your cholesterol. So it's not only your diabetes in general, but your cardiovascular condition too, because some of us like to say, and you can make a big argument, that diabetes is just as much a cardiovascular problem and disease as it is a metabolic one.
What percentage of Americans have diabetes? What's the latest thinking there?
Well, most of the data admit that this is probably an underestimation, but we look at cross sections in different areas. It's anywhere from 8 to 10% of the population. Right now, the estimate is there are about 30 million folks in the United States with diabetes. If we look at what's called pre-diabetes, or in so-called impaired glucose homeostasis, would be the $5 series of words instead of the $1 pre-diabetes. That problem is affecting, if you add up that along with the number of people with diabetes, it is an unbelievable nearly 100 million people in the United States.
Whoa.
Have either pre-diabetes or diabetes now. And I pinch myself when I say that, but that is, there you are. That's the latest data. So it's a little scary when you look at those numbers. But look, this is a problem for which is eminently treatable.
All right. Dr. David Armstrong, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Pleasure is mine, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Dr. Armstrong now over at University of Southern California, the Keck School Medicine. There you go. Coming out this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw. Ray Allen ably assisting Mike. Together, they'll put on a 60-minute program for you from 4 to 5. Tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 9, and then me, Bill Buckmaster. Dan Shearer will be with me. We'll interview Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor. On behalf of Ray, have a great afternoon and evening.